thanks for staying, everyone. So this this panel is on how we teach computational creativity. It's largely prompted by a discussion that was on the computational creativity mailing list a while back about teaching this stuff. And so I thought, in this careful planning for this session, I'd start by very, very quickly going through the module that we have taught this year between myself and Colin Johnson at University of Kent to give an example of what we've done. It's the first year we've made huge numbers of mistakes, but some good things too. Then I thought I'd look at the AECC website because there's some resources on there, and I can't remember exactly where. But then I thought we'd just make this a very open discussion and see what people think, what people are doing. So this is the third year undergraduate module we teach at the University of Kent in computational creativity. The idea is that it covers theory, practice, and some philosophical debates as well. We teach it between the two of us, myself and Colin Johnson. Two lectures a week, one lab class a week, one practical lab class a week, and in the second half of term, we have seminars, discussive seminars, which for computer science students, which are the students, this is new. How do you get computer scientists to talk to each other? You give them credit for it. So they get a participation mark, and we ask them to present as well. So part of the assessment for this module, we have a presentation and participation section where each week they read a paper. We get four students to present the papers because of two seminars, and we ask them to either take a positive approach to their report, what's good about it, or a negative approach. This is stolen entirely from Thor Magnusson's course at Sussex, which Alice Eldridge teaches now as well. But to get them to present the paper in either a let's sell this paper or let's criticise it beyond belief. And actually, the students started by saying, but we're going to read these papers, but how are we going to criticise them? They're published research. And at the end, they were criticising the heck out of them. We also, the other part of the assessment, apart from the exam at the end, was a practical project. Write a creative system or experiments towards it. These are the papers, if anyone was interested, that we got them to look at in the seminar. So the topics we covered, an introduction, models of creativity. So we tended to have a theoretical lecture and a practical lecture every week. Textual stuff, music improvisation, design, philosophy, social creativity, game creativity to finish.
Is this page available someplace not protected?
It could be. I could email you. I think probably I can't officially make it available, but I can email people a version of it if you just let me know as an email. So that's what we. What's the AECC website? It's computational creativity. So that's one example. I know that there are modules on computational creativity in Mexico. I know there's one in Dan Ventura teaches one at Brigham Young. There's a version of one at Sussex. I think Hammy teaches one. Who else teaches computational creativity in some form? Billy, you did as well.
I do a graduate class for meta creation, and now to bring this MOOC, which is an upper level undergraduate for generative arts.
The MOOC thing? Yeah. Well, the MOOC class is going to be the generative arts and computational creativity, so it's a little bit the definition of what we're looking at is a little bit more large than what we mean in this community. And it's based on processes for automating creative tasks. And so the class is based on algorithms. And it goes from randomness to deep learning, going through every single case in graph. Very much.
What I'm looking for is that, I think on the Prosecco website there are some resources for teaching. This is, yes, on the here. Okay, while I'm trying to find that, so I think it would be nice to start up people having an open discussion about what their experiences are with teaching and what they found works and what they found doesn't work. I know we've got people in here who study as a student on these courses as well. Maybe, well, let's see. Shall we open up a chat about that?
Thank you.
Has anyone got something?
But it's one thing that is difficult when teaching it, that was true at the graduate level and very struggling with the undergraduate, that there's no single so-called practicals, there's no single platform where all of the domain we address in the community can be properly implemented. So it means the students have to know, if you really want to have an assignment, you know, on text, one on images, one on sound, etc., then you need students that are super proficient in all in one platform, and that's just complicated to get. At the undergraduate level, at least.
Yeah, one of the biggest things we struggled with in math class is because all of them are about music and text, and we don't learn how to write Twitter bots.
Yeah, exactly.
It's good for the
Twitter too.
So sometimes communal sharing of lab classes.
Well, I really like Rob's response to my earlier question about the shared platforms for us to use, that we could bring those into the tutorials of IEEC. So it could well be that the tutorials of IEEC could be ones that you could do anytime, right? So that could be the module that you could then run. So these tutorials, if we build them collaboratively, could then be deployed in other cases and then give it back to the community as well, right? So if you run it in Kent as a module or the day workshop or something, we improve it with those for next year.
Is anyone going to be running the tutorials? We're talking about the tutorials that were happening at the beginning of the session, at the beginning of the conference,
right,
and whether we could make them more widely available as a teaching resource.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so I'm not sure what the exact question was, but the slides from the Prosecco tutorial, at least, are all at the hand of the organizers and hopefully will be available on the website.
They are already available.
Ah, they are available. Okay, great.
What about the autumn school lectures?
Did
anybody use that? I have evidence that I was accosted the other day by someone saying, you said this in one of those sessions.
So
definitely at least one person has watched them. Because the thing they were crossing me about was quite a long way through the third lecture. So,
is that him?
The video lectures of something to do, giving lectures to the autumn school in 2 years, in fact. And I thought they might be useful.
Ah.
And
then
there we go.
But
those.
Father of your child.
Yes. Sorry. I think that's an introduction. What is it? Oh, no, it's now in the thing. These are pretty useful. Possibly. I mean, they're 2 years old now.
But there's stuff which is kind of standard. Stuff that's not.
Yeah, it's definitely foundational. So it goes down the practice side. Evaluation, if you were asking about comments, I used to teach a course called Ludic Computing and Imperial, struggle getting that to the teaching community. We wanted to call it Hellenistic Computing, really. I mean, where did you fix that? And we only gave 2 weeks, I gave 2 weeks on context creativity. And what worked to get students interested was saying, this is the third year course, so we've just spent 2.5 years of coming into them, how to write software to be reliable, correct, formally verifiable, yada, yada, yada. And I said, in context of we were trying to achieve the opposite, software which is capricious and unpredictable. And not entirely true, but it opened their eyes got them thinking about it. And we thought maybe that was something that makes a long time. Some people came up to me after and said, yeah, that was a really different way of looking at it.
The students that we had at Penn, some of them really struggled with the fact that this was a course where there was no right answers, we didn't have any solutions, pretty much, and they weren't expected to find the one perfect answer, the one perfect algorithm. So some of them really struggled with thinking in that different way. I'm wondering if I might pick on a couple of people who I know have sat in and been taught conversational creativity and see what you think about the experiences that you had. It was the module, the generative creativity or models of creativity at the University of Sussex. Can I do first?
So I did a master's program at the University of Sussex called Creative Systems, which sadly does not exist anymore as a master's program, but I believe the two core models of creativity, which I think is something you borrowed quite a lot of your material from it, and generative creativity, which was more of a practical course. And it was, a third year module or a postgraduate module covering a bunch of different themes and topics. And I think in general, I think the problem that we had at Sussex, which is why the masters didn't continue, was just lack of students who would be interested in taking the course and bringing in the cash. My experience was great because I think it was a kind of a personal thing that I was doing it for my own particular reasons. But I think it's the way that the course was structured was you had basically one major bit of coursework where you just the generative creativity module, the more practical one. You had one piece of coursework basically, which was the one that was marked, and that was you had to create a generative system of some kind. And that was I think there was one other piece of written work as well, but that was the main one. And I loved that, but I think some other students and even the ones on the master's students struggled with the idea of, you know, what it was they were supposed to do.
Yeah.
So I think it needs to be the marking criteria of that sort of thing does need to be very clear.
It's tricky to find the perfect marking criteria.
I studied Sussex under Alex Aldridge, and obviously I loved it. I wasn't going to be here. I guess some problems were perhaps that when we were doing two sort of separate tracks, I found in the labs and what we were actually discussing in the lectures. So in the labs, we were talking about creative coding, which I feel is a very different. It's just an approach to making software with creative coding, whereas computational creativity is I don't know how to describe it, but there's certainly something very, very different about understanding what creativity is. First time that many of the students, including myself, hit psychology type stuff. And having no skills ready for debate, evaluation that
we were asked to do was on a totally different level to what we were doing within the stuff that does have the clear answers. So I'm kind of just repeating what you've said, to be honest. But perhaps. No, I haven't got a suggestion, I'm afraid. But
okay, Rob?
So I just want to sort of feedback. I've taught computational creativity both in traditional lecture style and in design studios. And it's very different, of course, between those two. And the design studios rely on students coming in with a range of skills that they can then apply. So I've only ever taught it at either master level or third year undergraduate. But the design studio has the advantage of being able to deal with the problems of students needing to iterate over ideas and to really dig into and explore what's possible and to take it in their own directions. So it's also obviously much more likely that you're going to come across, you're going to be doing that within a design school. But that I think is something that as educators we can engage with. You know, if you've got a design school in your own university, look at seeing whether bringing some computation to them in terms of a computational creativity studio might be something they're interested in. Because they can certainly get a long way if they've done a bit of creative coding first, and then with a little bit of help, they can get a remarkably long way. And we were doing it as graduation show pieces, so they were ending up with things at the end that had to work, but really got the attention of industry when they came around, because these were things that the guys from industry had never seen computer systems or robotic systems in my case doing, and so it really got them a head start in their portfolios.
When I was reading the forum, some people were sharing the way we teach computational creativity. There are a lot of commentaries. But I'm curious to ask you guys, what are the kind of problems you have when you are teaching computational creativity? Do you have problems? For example, one of the problems I have is to get people interested in taking the course. As I mentioned before, for 10 years, we have 11 now, we have been running this international colloquium where people attend. They are really excited about that. However, when it comes to the class, it's an optional class. It's, people are not fighting to get to join the class. Compared to the amount of students, very few the people that really join. So I'm wondering if you are having similar problems. And also, one of the big problems is that my colleagues in computer science, especially, are very conservative. They are very sceptical about computational creativity, and that produces a big problem in the end. So I'm just curious to know if you have similar problems or other kind of problems.
I'm just going to pass to Joe quickly.
So, asking Xavier, because that wasn't quite sure what the specific kind of problems they're thinking about would be, but here's one set of problems which is related to ICCC, actually. I can speak on behalf of some student that there wasn't the best student paper award this year, and I think that some students really appreciate that. And what Rob was talking about, getting the leg up in your career, getting the best student paper award is probably a big thing. And in fact, as many people here are talking about bringing students in, there's a really interesting opportunity for those students potentially to collaborate. So, if Maya starts a new course in California, she should be able to collaborate with Anna here in Europe or whatever. And her students, more importantly, should be able to collaborate with the students. And maybe Rob has design students, can they collaborate with computer science students? So,
building in a sort of international track for students to do some peer-to-peer collaboration, which could be in the context of this conference, maybe a whole student's day, a student workshop where it's presented somehow. I'm not quite sure how that format would work, but that would, you know, make sure that the students don't get left out here. That's not, so that's maybe it's a problem. But I would ask you to go back to your question. Could you say one more time? Well, you had it was a really minor problem.
Actually, that might be a really nice hook for getting students interested in studying this stuff. That said, as a community, you can be part of it's something a bit different.
So our approach, the approach that I've used anyway, is that I've been in charge previously of the creative coding course in the first year, which then, within that context where they can get an early win, this is specifically for design students who are learning to code. So first year, first semester, they used to meet me and learn how to code, and these are design students who signed up for a design degree. But by the end of that, I was getting them doing generative systems, and that was something that they could get a quick sort of fix of what it's like to get a computer to produce cool stuff. And after they've got that under their belt, then the sale for come and make it smarter and apply some AI and I'll teach you some basic AI to make creative systems was a lot easier because they'd already managed to get to the point where the computer's already helping them, and they develop it as an augmented sketchbook. So within the creative coding, they do an augmented sketchbook, and then in the creative systems, they build a robot that was able to sort of autonomously sketch on its own. Having those links between creative coding courses and computational creativity, I think, is a really good way for getting people who are interested. Because they're already kind of showing their tendency in the creative coding, and it's an easy translation for them.
I'm not in a teaching institution, but I was thinking that maybe as a community we could think of something like Coursera. Because one of the problems is you have to teach about creativity, but you don't know about music. So if we have some kind of plan that distributes the job of the different areas, different approaches, different practical problems, it's a way to approach this kind of thing in a more distributed way. And then each institution could get from there what they need and then add into that. So it's an effort, of course. Maybe it's an idea.
So this is a really quick brainstorm I had to kind of answer my own question about the IEEE integration, but someone else made the comment about having a cultural program like this, that it was great here with the opera and stuff like that, but Simon would have the thing in Uganda where you guys organized the art show. And if that was something that was ongoing, there was effort to bring in student work, because student work can present a nice looking picture and the frame and the story behind that. And if Rob's talking about this, maybe the second iteration or the third one, you could also kind of tell a bit of a story as part of the performance, bringing both the art and the science behind it. But if that was like an ongoing thing, because the problem with the best student paper is only one person gets that. But if you could say, hey, we exhibited this work and it was maybe joint work from people from different institutions, that's a nice thing to put in your CV as the first publication of the exhibit.
Some companies have an undergraduate project track where they can submit undergraduate projects and they're not always brilliant on that. And which can bring in, you know, could be an incentive for students to take a course as well as engagement course. Mm-hmm. Rob, just about to say, John McCormack has a MOOC. Is it Creative Coding?
He's done Creative Coding. And I think he's going to do computational creativity.
He was doing another one. He's moving
from one platform to another. So I think that's why.
So there is some new material which I'm starting to have in the and combine them with good idea. I wouldn't have to teach anything on participation to music, but I know
really proud of you. I was motivated to do it on just the music and sound part, but then Ajay pushed back on that. So my discovery, seriously.
Something to ask in terms of logistics. If we did something like an undergraduate project track, when have people's undergraduates finish their projects by, I think mine is something like April. But for those, do you have undergraduates who could do it? Yeah.
For many people, it's later than April.
Later than April.
Which is then a problem.
Except in the Southern Hemisphere. Sort of, it's later than April.
They can be staggered by a year, but then the student can be a lot
One thing we have in the submission for our student projects is we ask them to make a video of a demo of the projects, mostly because marking takes a long time and installing takes a long time, and so we're trying to reduce the load a little bit. One thing I wanted to kind of throw open, I think we'll probably finish off balancing bonds throw up and the question to those of us who teach and those of us who are thinking about teaching, do we have an exam on our modules, or do we place the emphasis on the practical projects, which means that they can get more in depth in the practical project because there's more weight on it, or do you have an exam because you want to match those theoretical issues? Is Andy in there?
Yeah, personally, I don't really see the need for an exam in this kind of subject in creative systems. We didn't have an exam for either of the two core modules, and I think that was a really good thing. I probably wouldn't have been as interested in it if there was an exam. My essays are really squeaky, sorry.
Okay, so you just in the part of your response I was just about to say, I think it is extremely important that there is some kind of evaluation, formal evaluation of theoretical thought and philosophy for this field. Because otherwise it will just sit back into people making toys. And we've tried so hard for it not to be people making toys. So I'm not wanting to contradict Andy, but because of course you could do that perfectly well within a dissertation as part of a project or whatever. But I think there needs to be something like that. And personally, I don't think sitting down in a room in rows regurgitating facts is a particularly good way to examine anything. I rather like the idea of open book exams where somebody has maybe two days to write an essay given the open books and so on. But I do think it's really important that we keep the philosophy element there. Philosophy with a small p.
Something I did last time, and I think it worked out fine, was to have the students assess their own projects they did with the course in terms of your answering work and what was like space or something. So combining the more theoretical and conceptual material or content with what they actually did, so that had two nice goals at least. One was to make them really consider when they were working on the project what makes it creative or in which ways it's creative, because they would have to explain that in their take-home exam. And then on the other hand, you can cheat that easily because you write about your own system. The answers are not anywhere in the web, so we have to analyze your own system in terms of these concepts, and if you look at why they learn these things.
And was that just a self-review of their own system, or did they do peer review of other people's? Because I think they could learn a lot from doing peer review of other people's systems and trying to understand those and evaluate them.
In this case, there was no peer review of this case anymore. So they did something, I guess, a bit earlier on in the road. But then, in the end, this was just created by us. But yeah, it made a lot of sense.
Yeah, in the case of the MOOC, and because we give such a few credits for the students who pay, the students who take it for free, and when you have like dozens and dozens of students, grading is an issue.
So it's all quantum graders, and that's actually super funky the way it goes. But when it comes to computational creativity, that's something we find at the research level. We have issues with evaluation methodology. So of course that trickled down to the class level, where at some stage one student is like, my system is dope, the outcome is really, really creative and good, and everyone is like, no. And then so we do peer review a lot. Where the good part about the MOOC is we have so many students that we can get a lot of people to look at your work. And so part of the grading is students have to give constructive feedback to other students, give them points to do so. And we use some of that feedback to try to assess the more subjective dimension of some of the assignments, when we can generate be it poetry or music or visual arts or design.
So I'm looking at creating a program like this, and I have to say that one of the issues that I'm fighting with this is, it might be the opposite of what you're dealing with, but if you've taught Asian students, there's a tendency to be extremely rote, memorization oriented, and part of the mission here is to shock them out of that, and sit down exams is probably the worst possible way to do that. One of the experiences that I've had that I think might be related over many years of teaching language, computational linguistics, natural language, has been that we deliberately encourage cross-disciplinary students to come in. And so I end up with students who are coming in not only from computer science or electrical engineering, but from humanities and physics and all sorts of things. And it's been quite a challenge because their backgrounds are so incredibly different. The mathematics part that you sort of want to assume they know, that unfortunately the students with a more linguistic background have completely lost, and vice versa. And I imagine that this could be a problem in the teaching of computational creativity, and I'm wondering, for those of you who've been doing that, if you've encountered that, and if so, how you've been dealing with that.
So the thing I've wondered, but I've never managed to do, is to produce a micro-world computational creativity, apply the techniques, but the answers are actually known. I mean, there's sort of no reason why, when students are learning how to apply a technique, why we can't be using such small domains, but we can actually make auto-grades. Because getting the technique right, and then doing something interesting with it at the end, whether they write a dissertation or they give a demonstration, is fine. But there should be small micro-world tests or examples that we could put together that we can grade, that can be graded. I just think that that would be a resource for all teachers trying to get it into the classroom, that you've actually got something that has a sort of set of definitive answers of, yes, your system has searched to the ends of the space and found potentially interesting things within.
I'm just wondering whether you've encountered problems with teaching students who are coming from very different disciplines and backgrounds in the course of teaching computational creativity, and how you deal with it if you have.
I'll say just quickly that mine are music students who have very difficulties in grasping the fact that there are more than one person who are answer, and subjectivity is very difficult for me to be happy with, and some of them find it is actually threatening to know if they think about their degrees. So we deal with things from that side, but I think what Tim says is completely different because you can be sort of used to that.
So I'd say that the advantage in some ways of teaching art and design students who have no problems with there being no right answer. In fact, if I said there was a right answer, they'd probably boom. So that makes it easier. The hard bit is getting them over the hump of that they can do this. And as I said, that kind of takes two courses. That takes one course where they get the easy win of creative coding, and then another course where we take it to a sort of different level. But if they can get to generative systems,
Then taking them up to creative systems was basically our two-stage approach within the degrees. I think it's a harder challenge for computer science. I think getting computer science students to make that leap into the unknown is actually harder.
It's very difficult in computer science even to think a program is creative.
Yeah,
I tried really hard when I was at Oxford to get programming taught as a creative practice using the typical methods that are used in creative practice, and even the staff at Oxford wouldn't accept that idea. It's a problem. What I was going to say about the mixed audience part is, to some degree, we have that in computing already, right? Because we're getting people coming in, at least in the UK, not having been taught properly what computing is at school, because until recently there was a curriculum. So, in some sense, they don't know what they're being led in for either. And some of them really find it very hard indeed to program. They just don't have the right fundamental cognitive skills to program. And one of the ways that some organisations get around that is by kind of sweeping the pill by using different kinds of programming structures such as Alice, programming systems such as Alice or Squeak and things like that. Now, having seen the nice presentations earlier today of Concrete Flows, which I've seen before, and the Flower, which I haven't seen working before, it occurs to me that wasn't a bad remark, I just haven't seen it working. I have not seen it working. I have not seen it work. I know it has worked before. I forgot what I was going to say. Yeah, so this would take a lot of work, probably, but it strikes me that there is one thing we could do, which is to try to abstract away from the problem of programming, which does often kind of burden people. You know, you get caught in the shrubbery as you're trying to climb the tree. By building perhaps smaller building blocks than the ones that have been built so far, the students can actually assemble together into creative systems as in an exploratory kind of learning approach. I think that would be extremely valuable. I think there would be probably a good few years of development to put into something so that, for example, the problems that Martin was talking about with the typing of the inputs and outputs needed to be sorted out so you didn't get problems, all that kind of stuff. But I think that would be an enormously powerful tool to help students learn about the concepts of computational creativity from the beginning. And that could apply to art students as well as it could apply to computer science students.
Okay, so Raphael next, and then Ben Williams in the last comments, and then
we'll try to summarize. In Mexico, and we have also these interdisciplinary courses, and I was just thinking when you were talking, this course where half of the group was students in a master's course, philosophy of science. That includes people from philosophy, from psychology, historian, humanities. And the other half were computer science students. And it was a really interesting experiment. And what we do is we divide the class, the time of the class in two. So the students of philosophy of science, they were first reading some philosophers, some psychologists, about creativity in general, things like that. And then they tried, and the computer science students, they studied the papers of many of the people here. And so they present in the papers, and we were trying to make a link with all the philosophers, psychology science, and then have a discussion, a reflection of the people from philosophy side didn't have any background computers, they could not work. But they could reflect on how things were doing, how the knowledge were represented, if there were predefined instructions or not, what those implied, all that kind of stuff, and then discuss. And the discussion, so we have point of view from computer science and from this humanities area, and they were really, really friendly, really rich, really interesting. So basically, the point was that to give a space for the different point of view to discuss particular points that arise from the words that people in this room do.
Any kind of comments? I just comment there for myself. One of the students that we had in Kent this year, he had a particular individual learning function. He found it difficult to discuss things, so I spoke to him about the fact we had seminars. And he was very, very uncomfortable about it, so we worked on making him feel more comfortable talking.
he ended up going from shaking, physically shaking when he walked into the room, to getting the highest mark of the year. So the fact that it's not just about coding, it could be scientists, it's about these philosophical things as well, and probably vice versa for different types of students. If we can work the different aspects in, I think it's a very important thing.
For dealing with prereqs and the background of students, I make a big difference between the graduate level and undergraduate. Graduate level, like, typically less than 10 students, and so we can do one-on-one. So at CIAT, we have designers, artists, and computer scientists, but we teach all the designers and artists strong foundations on quantitative methodologies and computing, so they have that before they get into the class. And we teach the computer scientists, which is the funniest part, humanities and art, that is just revolve around their whole world. And then I started this one-on-one. And a lot of papers, including papers published at CCC, were actually papers that were developed during that class. And Scuttle is a class paper. The Liberal Generation with Nathan Thurston, which is quite successful, was a class paper. And so by doing one-on-one, you can really go from, you don't know anything about computational creativity, to you get into the conference in 12 weeks, which was efficient. At the undergrad level, I can't really comment much for now, because the cadenza didn't happen. But it certainly would be a completely different story. And the reason why I didn't do computational creativity at the undergrad level for Kenzie is because, unlike some in the room, I don't believe we have enough foundational material to do a complete undergraduate class. I do not believe that. And so I go generative, 90% or 80% generative, and I sprinkle it with a little bit of computational creativity just as a more spicy.
Just respond to the capability of undergraduate students. I had a project, Curious Whispers, which I employed 3 research assistants and it produced nothing over a year. I had one honors student do it in 6 months, and she'd taken my system, my generative and computational creativity system stuff, understood the theory, and just could get on with it. So the undergraduate students can definitely do it by third or fourth year of their studies, and they can do amazing work. So it's well worth investing in the undergrads as well.
So I have a question which is not connected to the last few discussions. It's more connected to the competent field made stuff. I mean, how do you deal actually, if you have a course of computational creativity, with the topics which are out of your scope, so to say? So I have here an exemplary course which we were trying to put together at the JSI, and it has this general part about what is innovation creativity and innovation and metrics and planning and all these general things. But then when you get into the stuff which is connected to applications and actually connected to the student projects that you were mentioning, then we realize we're quite limited. So we can tell them something and we can equip them well for stuff which is about language and texts and data mining and machine learning aspects of that, and maybe some imaging. But when it came to music and all those things, or maybe some more demanding things, let's say, or some connections to art, we were not so well equipped to tell them something so that they could do something about it. So essentially, I'm afraid they would be like equipped for some aspect, but not for the others. So how do you tackle that?
This is something we struggled with actually at Kent, because we didn't have that full-fledged experience that we needed. So some subject areas were definitely more likely covered than others. In projects, we gave them a lot of emphasis to that they had to go out and equip themselves with the skills that they needed, but we didn't want to restrict their interests. They were very interested in doing game generation, and Colin and I didn't quite have the skills for that. We didn't want to stop them from doing it. It's a difficult.
Yeah, but you just cannot help them much.
Yeah.
And so that's another thing where I see a strong difference between graduate and undergraduate. At the graduate level, where you, because it's one-on-one, we keep the student's domain and his background at the top and in groups. So Christine is a choreographer, she does choreography. So-and-so is an architect, we're doing generative architecture. So people keep that domain, give them the
tool and then they go in the other way. As an undergraduate, you can't have, you know, in the same, usually don't have in the same class people that are musicians, visual artists, architects, designers, etc. So you get a standard by choosing a domain and sticking to it, and therefore you get problem to cover the variety of approaches that we have in the field, because most of it is still domain specific. There's very little that is domain dependent at the moment.
What you guys are talking about with undergraduates just remind me of another not classroom based education, but in the US, and I don't know if there's anyone here from the US special teaching or Tibet Gansa, maybe you can comment, but there's this thing called NSF Research Experiences for Undergraduates, and I did it twice, and I ended up coming back a third year as a mentor another time. But it's a summer program, you get a stipend. I did it after my second year and after my third year, and you know, you're meant to help with research. In some cases, they're more structured. In some cases, it's more open. But it, you know, you're taking people who've got the basics under their belt. But like in the second one, we wrote, you know, two or three papers that summer, and like, I continued as a co-author on those papers. It was a real serious introduction to research. So I would just attest to what Rob was saying. With the right preparation, people can definitely reflect on it. And maybe that program was something that Dan.
Yeah, there's some UK equivalent to that as well. Mostly there in the UK, they're covered by individual institutions. Where there's a program running this summer for sixth formers. So people just leaving school who are about to start university. It's sponsored by Nuffield Research Grant. So I've got three students coming in to do 4-week projects. Let's wrap up. We started a little bit early, so I'm going to try and summarise. I think the key thing that's coming across, in the sense of practically what we can do, is to share what we've got. So I can give you a lecture on evaluation, I can swap it for a lecture in games or something. But sharing resources for teaching, sharing resources for assessment, the micro-worlds that we were just talking about, and sharing lab classes as well would be a massive, massive help for us. Some of our lab classes are a bit hit and miss. And the other thing that's coming across to me very strongly is we can't just assess practical programming skills, we can't just assess theoretical stuff, we can't just assess philosophical stuff. We need to try and make sure that the students coming out of our modules have this combination of the three. And anything else I forgot? Theory, practice, philosophy. So there's a big emphasis coming out of these discussions that every single aspect is important. We should be prioritising one over the other. Have I missed out anything? No. Okay, this has been really, really good. Thank you, everyone, for speaking. And I think that's the unofficial end of the conference.
Thank you.